Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm inviting my friend and Davidson College classmate Joe Robinson to come back and talk to us because he stunned me a few weeks ago when we talked about his career as an oboe player, not just an oboe player, but the principal oboist in the New York Philharmonic. And Joe, you told me a lot of stories and we talked about a lot of music. You got me excited. And so you agreed to come back and present to us a few pieces of music, of oboe music, that were important to you and particularly important in your career. You picked out 6 selections to share with us. What's your first?
Well, last time, D.G., I kept dodging the question you asked over and over, which was, how did you get to the New York Philharmonic? So
how did you win
the job, right?
It's something that every oboe player, every musician in the world would aspire to, and you got it. And all your colleagues said, Oboe Joe got that job?
Yeah, how did that happen? As you know, I didn't go to conservatory, so you know, we came out of Davidson College in the same class. Well, so there's quite a long story about that. As you know, I took a long time to write about it. But it came right down to the day of decision. There were 2 other guys playing, and this was in December of 1977. And we were all asked to play the same piece of music with a pianist who worked for the New York Philharmonic, and that music was the first movement of the Sonata for Oboe and Piano by the French composer Camille Saint-Saëns. And this is that music. So on the day of decision, these are the notes that Zubin Mehta and the search committee for the principal oboe chair.
These are the ones. You the job.
They got me the job.
Let's listen to the music, and then maybe you can tell us a little bit more.
Great.
After we've heard that music.
Thank you.
Well, Joe, that was beautiful. Was this from that actual performance for Zubin Mehta in the tryout, or did this come at some other time?
Oh no, I made the recording much later, but I'd actually played it 2 weeks earlier in my first audition in New York. And I think Zubin liked it so much, he required the other players to do the same thing.
He'd heard you play it before, and he thought you did a good job, so he was...
He asked the other oboists who were not
familiar with it as you were.
Right. I think what true.
Why did you like it, and do you think he liked the piece other than that he just heard you play it and thought you did a good job playing it?
Well, I hope that people listening agree with me that it's a very appealing attractive piece of music, not too complicated, but anyway, I think it's remarkable that Saint-Saëns wrote this piece of music when he was 85 years old, the last year of his life, and it's so optimistic and affirmative. It's reassuring to think somebody at that near the end of his life could be so optimistic. And I hope the audience recognized some of
that. Were there some particular challenges in that piece that Zubin Mehta would have been looking for to see how you and the other competitors for that job would do? Were there easy places, I guess, to mess up?
Well, there always are. That's for sure. I mean, that's one of the things about any audition, that it's really a tightrope and you can fall off at any moment. But this piece is not particularly challenging in a technical sense. It's just beautifully melodic, and one hopes that all the notes come out in tune and that the music makes sense. So I think Zubin responded to what I do well and what I think I did well playing that piece, which is why I chose it. So anyway, the next one we're going to hear.
All right, well, let's take a break and come back and hear the next one.
Okay.
I'm visiting with Joe Robinson. We're talking about the oboe, his playing of the oboe, and we're doing it all in the context of a biography that he's written, and one of the best parts of it was how he got the job, and if you turned in late, you just heard what he played to get the job with the New York Philharmonic in the lead oboist position. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Joe Robinson. And we're talking about the oboe, and we're talking about it in the context of Joe's, although he lives with us here in Chapel Hill now, he was for many years the principal oboist of the New York Philharmonic. And so he's bringing to us some of the music that was important to him in his career. And Joe, what have you got for us next?
The last movement of the Haydn Concerto, Joseph Haydn Concerto for Oboe and Orchestra, is conducted by Zubin Mehta, and I played this. This was recorded in March of 1987. As far as I know, Zubin loved this piece, so he actually programmed it over two subscription weeks. I think I'm the only one soloist who ever did that, at least in my time in New York. So I played it eight times. We did the same program four times a week. So he just kept the Haydn Concerto in the second week program. So, you know, I played it, as I say, eight times in 2 weeks. And this is a live recording from one of those performances. So I wanted to bring it along, though, because it's a kind of theme and variations that shows, well, many of the virtuosic potentials of the oboe. So most of the orchestral oboe rep is expressive, slow, contemplative. And this is, it's got some musical fireworks. So it's not a piece I could play anymore, that's for sure.
What do you mean you couldn't play it anymore?
It's just too fast. You know, there's an athlete.
Your fingers slow down?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, not just the brain. I mean, you know, it's
So when we listen to this piece, will we hear a fast exchange of notes and music as you play the oboe?
Yeah,
tell us. I'm sorry, I asked you. We didn't give you a chance to answer.
No, I love it. I love it.
Moving on to the next question. As a soloist. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the moment. I mean, this is when you're shooting the foul shot in double overtime for the national championship. I mean, you're the center of attention. Your picture's on the cover, and people are coming because they hear Joseph Robinson's going to be playing the oboe tonight, and this is a great piece for the oboe. Is that sort of, I mean,
that's it. That, well, that's exactly.
You're also tired.
Well, it's not just the, you know, the moment at the foul shot, foul line. It's 20 minutes, and you know, there's always something a little bit harrowing or perilous about performing at a high level in any field. And but you know, at a certain point, it's just an opportunity to, well, do what can be kind of you know, thrilling, fun. And that, so I think everybody will hear the sort of the athletic element of playing oboe. I mean, it could, it's the same thing with flute or clarinet or violin or anything. I have to play very fast, and I have to hope that I hit, you know, the notes in the right place, in tune, and have it all make sense.
Well, you played it 8 times. And did you do it perfectly every time?
No. I'm a human being, you know.
Did you play well?
I think so because, I played it pretty well. I hope you think when you hear this that I played it well. But it was never – there's no perfection. You know, nothing is ever really quite perfect, quite good enough. But as I say, it certainly pleased my music director, and that was pretty important.
That's Zubin Mehta, of course, and this was recorded in 1987.
At Lincoln Center,
Oboe Concerto by Joseph Haydn, played by Joseph Robinson. Let's listen to it.
Thank you.
Well, Joe, hearing it again, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was pretty impressed. Here in my old age, I'm thinking, that guy back there was pretty good, wasn't he?
Well, let me ask you this. If you were called upon to play this again and you'd say, no, I'm too old to do it, my fingers won't do it. But if you said, well, just Joe, try it. There are things that, as our facilities diminish, there are ways to cover it up and to make it and to maybe not do everything that you could. Could you go
fake
on stage
it.
And not fake it, but to do it the way that you can do it now and make your way through that piece?
Probably not. I mean, you know, the finger-tongue coordination is probably on the cutting edge of the, as I say, athletic part of playing. And that coordination slows down. Tongue is much slower now. So when I hear the triplet passage I just played, I think, good grief, how did I do that?
Well, we need to take a break, but stick with us. If you join us late, I'm visiting with Joseph Robinson, and we're talking about the oboe, and we're hearing some of his favorite pieces and hearing stories about each one of them. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Joseph Robinson, who is the same person as my friend Joe Robinson. And we're talking about his career as the principal oboist at the New York Philharmonic. And Joe's been good enough to pull out some of his favorite pieces, some because he loved them and some because they fit into his career. Tell us what you have brought to us.
I thought it would be good to showcase two of the most important orchestral excerpts. For every audition, a list of these things is sent out. And they're fairly predictable because in all of the music written for symphony orchestra, there are actually many important oboe fragments, solos. And so these are two of the most important. The first one we're going to hear is the slow movement solo from Brahms' Violin Concerto, which in this recording featured Anna-Sophie Mutter and the New York Philharmonic conducted by Kurt Mazur. I played this several times with Miss Mutter, who was a favorite of von Karajan and just one of my favorite violinists, one of the greatest in the world. So it's just that Brahms gave the opening melody of the slow movement to the oboe before the violin. And there's a famous story about one of my teachers, Marcel Tabutos, playing it so beautifully. Fritz Kreisler said, "How can I possibly follow that?" He said he put his violin down. They had to start over with the rehearsal. But
well, I'm sorry, we won't have time to hear the violin follow your solo. So you're playing this, and again, where are you?
We recorded this at Lincoln Center. But I played it with her in Salzburg. You know, and certainly one of the great collaborations in my career was with Anna-Sophie Mutter. Not only this piece, but the Beethoven Concerto.
Well, let's listen. We're going to listen to Brahms's Violin Concerto, the opening.
Slow movement.
The slow movement, the opening oboe solo played by Joe Robinson.
Thank you.
Joe, that was beautiful. You really played it? Is that one you could play again?
Oh, I could do that one again. No problem.
Earlier we talked about this very fast piece that your fingers couldn't keep up with.
Yeah.
But there's other things that diminish in terms of your playing as well. You mentioned your tongue isn't this fast. But this one, if it's slow and melodious, you can maybe you can even play it better now.
Well, there is a certain amount of compensation in experience. So that's why I lasted as long as I did. And I'm still playing, you know, if it's not too demanding technically. I play Gabriel's oboe in church these days.
What do you mean?
Yeah, you know, it's a nice, long, beautiful solo. People come up afterwards, you know, sometimes with tears in their eyes, and they say, please play that at my funeral. And I say, well, I better tape it.
But there is a level in terms of the performance of us as we get older that we're not as agile as we once were, and we've lost some of it. But we have learned some things, and in terms of emotion, we are in touch maybe with the emotional level of the music and better able to convey it by playing.
Well, I hope so. I mean, there's, of course, in the art of performance, the interpretive art, it's never quite the same way twice. And the challenge is to make basically sculpt the tone through time, tracing arcs that are logically inevitable and that finally add up to a meaningful, understandable, and I hope emotionally satisfying experience. So as long as I'm able to play the notes themselves, I think maybe I have more understanding about how they could be shaped and molded than I did 30 years ago.
Well, that's interesting. Now, you've got a second piece for us to play in this segment. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it and tell us about whether or not it's one that you could play.
Well, in our last conversation, you know, DJ, I told you that I saw my predecessor, Harold Gomburg, play the slow movement of Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, the solo that opens that, without taking a breath. And that was one of his trademarks, so that when I joined the New York Philharmonic and thought I had to do the same thing, Zubin interrupted the rehearsal to complain that maybe I didn't have to breathe, but he did, and the music needed to breathe.
Now, go through that again, Joe. This is a long oboe
solo. Yeah,
and your predecessor, whom you admired a lot, could do this without taking an extra breath somehow.
Yeah, kept going,
and it goes on for a long time.
It's not long in terms of just
almost a minute long.
Well, it is, but it's of course that's not long if you were diving for pearls or something. You know,
but to keep blowing air out of your lungs for a minute.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Where is the moment that the experienced oboe player that Zubin Mehta was looking for? You know, had found, expected you to
breathe
in and take a quick breath. How do you? You're blowing. How do you get that quick breath without interrupting the music?
Well, when you hear this, if you don't know it already, you will recognize a place where the music starts over, just the way it repeats in the middle. And so you see here exactly the same notes that began the solo halfway through.
A natural. It's not going to interrupt anybody's understanding or appreciation of it.
Right.
But why did your predecessor want it? Did he just want to prove that he could do it?
Well, there is a kind of principle in music, in the interpretive art of music, that longer phrases are better than short ones, and that an 8-bar phrase is more sophisticated and absolutely more valuable than 2 4-bar phrases. So we all sort of have an aspiration to what they say call extend the line.
Right. I want to hear this.
Yeah, okay. Now you'll see.
What is it again? What is it?
This is the opening of the second movement of Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony. Thank you.
Well, Joe, I couldn't hear you take the breath, but you did. If a good, careful oboe player would have heard you where you took the breath in the middle of that piece.
Well, I hope not. I hope not. I tried to disguise it, but I did continue playing when I took a quick breath through my nose, blowing air through out my mouth and then taking air in my nose. Well, but the thing about this is a great oboe solo that follows a fierce first movement with the brass players, calling a kind of a call of fate, and the strings in the first movement roiling and squirming, so the reaction in the second movement is so charming because it's really a cradle song. It's a little like saying after all of the travail of the history of Russia, finally there isn't something you can believe in that survives, and that's the mother's love of her child. So this little solo, it's marked, it's in a way very simple sounding, but it has more instructions from the composer than anything I had to play. You know, it says it's supposed to be in the manner of a song. It's supposed to be very simply indicated, but also slightly dancing. Tchaikovsky put a lot of responsibility on the player.
All right, Joe, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to hear some other dramatic oboe pieces. Joe Robinson, I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you join us late, I'm visiting with Joseph Robinson. We're talking about his favorite musical instrument, the oboe. Those of us who know Joe now as a Chapel Hill resident or knew him when he was growing up in Hickory or when he was at Davidson playing the oboe, we're very proud of his success and his role as the principal oboist in the New York Philharmonic for many years. Joe, when we were here earlier talking about your music, you mentioned, you know, this incredible composer from Russia, Shostakovich, and his situation, and you have an oboe piece that's part of one of his symphonies, and it's a real cacophonous symphony, and then tell us about what role the oboe plays in this symphony.
Oh, Shostakovich wrote 9 symphonies, and there were wonderful oboe solos in all of them. In fact, the first symphony he wrote when he was 17 starts with one of the biggest oboe solos. The second movement starts with one of the biggest solos. So anyway, the fifth symphony might be the most popular of all of Shostakovich's symphonies. He wrote this piece embattled by Stalin at the end of World War II, 1945. And so the symphony as a whole is full of Sturm und Drang and irony too, because he was trying to sort of pull a fast one over the censors, Stalin's people, who didn't like his music very much. So in any case, and you have heard it and seen a YouTube performance of this very performance, in fact, which happened in
Tokyo. The same performance that's recorded here?
Yeah.
That's on the YouTube.
Yeah, this was.
Well, I would just say go to YouTube and New York Philharmonic Shostakovich number
5. And Bernstein is conducting.
Bernstein's conducting. Joe Robinson's playing the oboe.
Yeah.
But let's hear it. Can we hear it now?
Sure.
That was short but lovely, and after you talked about how you know, how troubled the overall symphony was, that was a pretty smooth, lovely piece.
Well, I've always thought of it, and even when I was in the middle of the performance playing it, that, you know, this was the moment when clouds parted and some sort of, I said, heaven-descending dove came into view and promised a better life than what the Russians were experiencing in 1945. So if there's a glimmer of hope in this symphony, it's in that oboe solo you just heard.
Well, now you've got another piece for us.
Well, I thought just to end the program, you might like to hear a different kind of musical voice. This comes from my solo CD. I only made one of them. And was a little piece written, suite. It's called Five Movements, written by Walter Piston, an American composer who taught at Harvard. And not so well known, but I think that you'll find it a lot of fun. For one thing, it's a canon, so that the piano leads to the oboe, and I'm chasing along afterwards trying to keep up. And it's really quite, I think, exciting in the way, and hard driving, and it'll be a good way to end the program.
Well, it's modern.
Well, it was written in 1931, and that's not too modern.
But I mean, there was a change. When we think of the symphony music, and that, there's it's Beethoven and Tchaikovsky. Is this a little bit different, or is he in the tradition of the classical?
Yeah, mainly. Well, we talk about classical tradition sometimes at form, but mainly in terms of the musical scale. So this is what we call tonal music. It's not going to offend the ear, not too clashing or anything. So it's very active. It's called neoclassical because he wrote in the 20th century, in some ways akin to J.S. Bach.
All right, we're going to listen to this. Is from Walter Piston, Suite for Oboe and Piano, played by Joseph Robinson. Joe, that's the last piece you selected for us. And what, I mean, is there something that you can think of that we should have noticed about that other than it was lovely?
Oh, well, I think it's a kind of a musical exclamation point. And with the, as I said, so kinetic and kind of exciting at the end. It's almost, it could be, remind people of, you know, a couple squirrels chasing each other, and the piano
was leading and you were chasing after.
Right,
was that going on in your head, or were you just trying to play the music as it was assigned to you?
Well, no, both. I mean, you know, I'm aware of the chase, for sure.
And what is the conductor doing to you and the piano while this is going, or is he moving the orchestra along, leaving you all to do your thing and letting the
Well, there's no orchestra at all in this one. It's just oboe and piano. So just like the first piece, the Saint-Saëns, this is an oboe sonata.
So you all there's no conductor at all. You all are on stage managing yourself, and you're the only, that's all there is to it.
Right. Well, that's right. Two voices and a duet.
Now, you have one CD of your work, and you picked this one to be a part of it. Why did you pick this, the sole CD of your work?
Well, a conductor in England who was working for Calla Records suggested a series of solo CDs by principal players of the New York Philharmonic. I think I was the first one he contacted. And so there are really 12 in a set called Legends of New York. And I guess, I mean, you know, I was certainly flattered to be called a legend before my time.
Now it's appropriate.
Yeah, maybe. I hope so. Yeah.
Well, for those of us who grew up with you, and as you corrected me, not from Hickory, but from Lenoir, North Carolina, and the wonderful instruction that you got in the band because of the famous Lenoir High School band that you talked about the last time you were here, I want to continue to celebrate that to Captain Harper and the wonderful difference he made in your life and the lives of many other people as a really as a challenge for those of us who have resources and talents to figure out ways to apply them as Captain Harper did so that we can look back from heaven and say we did make a difference.
Well, I certainly did. I mean, I've given my life to this art form because of the start I got in Lenoir and ultimately succeeded to the degree I did because I took it seriously from the beginning and aimed, I suppose, I mean, I certainly tried to aim high.
Well, you did aim high and you achieved high. And yeah. Thank you for sharing just a piece of that with us.
Yeah, well, thank you, Gigi. It's always fun to get together.
If you join us late, guest Joseph Robinson, a neighbor of ours in Chapel Hill, former principal oboist for the New York Philharmonic. This is D.G. Martin who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.